right, welcome to the Lakers Outsiders podcast. My name is Donnie McHenry. Today we are going to be previewing the upcoming media day and training camp for the Lakers. Believe it or not, media day is on Monday, September 26th. I'm just laughing, just thinking to myself that it's that close. With the team's first practice happening the day after, I believe. I don't know, that's usually the case. And then after that, Lakers' first preseason game. Another crazy thing to realize. First preseason game is Monday, October 3rd. So it's go time. And to get us all ready for go time, it's not going to be just me previewing the kickoff of training camp. I'm joined by a special guest. You can find him covering the Lakers as well as the rest of the NBA on the Hoops Tonight YouTube and podcast show under the Volume Podcast Network. His name is Jason Timpf. Jason, how you doing?
Mr. Donnie, what's up, man? It's good to finally meet you face-to-face, and I'm excited to talk some basketball. And I, too, am completely blown away that it's right around the corner. I was looking at my schedule, and I finished my power rankings on Thursday next week, and then literally the Warriors play the Wizards the very next night. We're a week from Friday from a preseason game. Isn't that insane?
I was like, I don't know, like I knew the first preseason game was, and I'm right? It's October 3rd. I think
for the Lakers, yes.
For the Lakers, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like obviously I knew the 26th and the 3rd are a week away, but in my mind it was like there's 2 weeks between like media day and preseason started, but nope, just 1 week for the Lakers returning what, three, four guys from last season to get all accustomed to each other, then probably what, lose their eighth straight preseason game or whatever streak they're on over the past couple years. Oh, man.
But I'm going to be paying much closer attention to preseason this year. I think that was a valuable lesson, the juxtaposition of the 2020 Lakers preseason and the 2022 Lakers preseason.
Yeah, I definitely am. I think everyone else is. Last year, I was like, whatever, it's preseason. We were taking the same attitude as the players. But now it's like we're going to be treating preseason like the NBA Finals. But hey, exactly. we'll get to those games when we get to them. Definitely want to talk to you just about the general on-court product that the Lakers are probably going to have this season. But of course, we got to get through media day first on Monday before we start to hear some rumblings at a training camp and whatnot and get some interviews when players get right out of practice. I'm sure media day is going to have some headlining quotes, not only on Lakers Twitter and Lakers media, but throughout the NBA. I think the only media day that's more anticipated around the league is probably Brooklyn's. Obviously some connections in between those teams, but obviously we've got the Russell Westbrook thing to deal with on Monday. Do you kind of think Russ's media day is going to be like a sequel to his confrontational exit interview where it's more of the same? Do you think he'll kind of just say all the right things and then we'll kind of see if he actually means them at a later date? Because there's going to be some tense questions presented to Russ on Monday.
You know, sequel, I don't think it'll go the route of a sequel, since I believe the media questioning will have a more optimistic tone to it. Everyone was really angry after last season, and the tone was very finger-pointy in every direction. And for the record, Russ got the unfair portion of the blame, and I'm as big a Russ critic as you'll find, and I thought he got an unfair portion of the criticism. But I do believe we'll get a similar tone in a lack of taking accountability. Like, I don't think you're going to see Russ step up there and be like, it was my fault that I carried myself like I was a star premier ball handler, even though in terms of every conceivable metric and eye test, I was the worst high volume ball handler in the league, and I had no right to forego all of the role player responsibilities that my team needed from me. I don't expect to hear that, but I do expect to hear a more optimistic approach from the media. And I do think he'll have an easier time navigating those questions and staying forward focused rather than backward focused on the Russ front.
Yeah, I guess I could kind of see him, you know, expressing excitement about having Darvin Ham around. And, you know, who knows? I mean, well, one, we haven't heard from Russ since those exit interviews, I guess. But I'm sure he's probably, I mean, if he actually believes everything Ham's been complimenting him on all offseason. He's got to be a fan of Ham's. So, yeah, that is interesting you say that. I do kind of see what you're saying in terms of, you know, well, he's definitely not going to be, like, accepting any blame for last season, but hopefully it's kind of more chill. And like you said, reporters may be, you know, feeling better than they were, you know, that exit interview just shortly after Frank Vogel getting fired and all that stuff. Speaking of Ham and Rob, another thing to look out for media day is, of course, I don't think we heard from Rob Pelinka once this off season. I believe it was just after the flurry of like free agent signings to kick off free agency. I think
either that or for Darvin Ham's intro. Was he there for that? I can't remember. Darvin Ham's intro. This whole offseason's been a blur.
Absolute blur. Yeah, he was there for Darvin Ham's introductory press conference. That might have been the only time we've heard from him. Heard from Ham a few times this summer. I think at the Beverly press conference, Ham, I think some question presented to him something about the Russ rumors. Obviously, he's not really even going to discuss that, but he did kind of say something along the lines of like, oh, you'll just have to ask Rob about that. Well, all right, Rob, there you go. He put the ball in the tee for you, I guess. Now Rob has to talk Monday after, weirdly, they canceled Wednesday's interviews. That's a whole nother. I don't even know what that is about. But either way, we're hearing from Rob on Monday. What do you think he's going to be saying? Last time he kind of had a report thrown in his face where I think it was about the report of Woj tweeting out Vogel getting fired like the night of the Lakers last game. And then I can't remember his words exactly, but I think he was essentially like, I don't answer to baseless reports. Do you think he's going to be answering to baseless reports on Monday? Because they're definitely going to be getting thrown in his face.
Yeah, and then we had another one from Shams Charania just a couple hours ago saying that they were, you know, discussing things with the Pacers earlier this week. So, I mean, Rob's a salesman, man. His specialty is to make us think the very rosy-colored, you know, optimistic view of whatever the situation is. And, you know, I'd be lying to you if I wasn't in kind of frustrated by all of this. I won't get into it because I know that what you had mentioned before the show, rightfully, because it can get off the rails, but that you didn't want to touch on the trades that much. But the reality of the situation is their whole like narrative that they're trying to sell to Lakers fans is essentially that they're being prudent and they're being patient and they believe that there's this better option potentially in the future. And they're all of a sudden being very measured with their approach, which is a hilarious thing juxtaposed with last summer when it was like, whatever it takes to get the Russ deal done, just throw it in the package, even though I don't think any of the other 28 teams in the league would have paid a first round pick to take on Russ, even after that season in Washington. So it's all very strange. My guess is we'll get a very similar line to what we got from Ramona Shelburne when she was on with Zach Lowe a couple weeks ago. It's going to be, you know, we don't think any of these packages make us a contender, which is a whole other thing that we don't need to get into. But they clearly don't have any confidence in this roster. And either that or they're using that as an excuse to not make a deal. And my guess is he'll kind of continue to sell that line in the very Rob Pelinka way. He might even throw in some book quotes. He might even, you know, make some biblical references. Who knows? But he's going to find some way to sell it as though he's making the most prudent and patient and sound future-focused approach with this team, is my guess.
Yeah, I was kind of laughing when you were talking about like how they're being they're kind of presenting like they're very calculated and they're being very patient. Like, oh, we're going to save some cap space for next summer. Like, oh, we're trying to preserve our assets. Like, we're not trying to deal these two first round picks when like, yeah, last summer they leaked like in a report. I can't remember who it was to, but like, yeah, Russell Westbrook was like our plan B. Plan A was like just getting Dame Lillard. The plan before that was just like, you know, getting prime Michael Jordan. Like you guys just like had like, you guys actually made actions on like the most foolish wish list of all time. But now you guys are the careful, calculated franchise who are gonna, you know, make sure you make the best moves around the margins. Like, right. Okay.
Dude, it's ridiculous. It's like, how dumb do they think we are? to be honest. like we can see all the thing, all of the things that are happening. And you know, the part that blows my mind about it is, let's say that you do have an eye for the future. Okay, so let's say, for instance, you're sitting here thinking like, okay, we think LeBron's going to be around 2 or 3 more years, but we want to be relevant in 2027 and 2029. Okay, let's take that into consideration for a minute. What have we seen from Anthony Davis in the last couple of years that makes you think he's a franchise cornerstone that you can build around 5 years from now? I haven't seen anything. Have you guys? I'm curious to hear you guys' thoughts. So, okay, so let's say that we've established now that Anthony Davis has to be some sort of subsidiary talent on the roster. They are so far away from contending in 2027. They don't have any optimistic piece outside of that group. I mean, Austin Reaves is a really interesting young player. I like him. I think he's going to be a really solid fifth starter in this league for a really long time. Like Austin Reaves, he's not a franchise cornerstone in the late 2020s. So the reality of the situation is this team, when this era is done, when the LeBron Anthony Davis era is done, they're going to go about the same thing that they've done throughout the rest of this era. They're going to clear the cap sheet and look to find other stars. There is no universe where they're going to be willing to go the long route they did earlier this decade, where they suck for 6 or 7 years and compile draft picks. Lakers fans won't stand for it. So I don't understand how they are, what kind of audience they think they're talking to, that they think they can convince us that that's a prudent approach. You have LeBron James in year 20. Your cap sheet is super clear in the future. You can start from scratch in 2027 via the free agent market. There's no reason in the world why you should not be going in with this particular group. And if you tell me that you can't win with LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Dennis Schroeder, Patrick Beverley, and 2 or 3 role players from Russell Westbrook trade, then trade LeBron and AD, because you clearly don't believe in them as a core. You know what I'm saying?
That's what I've been kind of telling people. Like, yeah, I get being smart and safe about like trading first round picks, and I get in a vacuum, like, yeah, probably shouldn't be trading 2 first round picks for Buddy Hield and Miles Turner. Of course, we're not in a vacuum. That's just ignoring what Russell Westbrook is, and any team has to literally give him, fork over $47 million and say, all right, see ya, bye. We
in LeBron's age.
Yeah, and LeBron's age.
And the Lakers are desperate. That ruins your negotiation standing. Forget about anything else. You cannot negotiate hard when you are the desperate team and everybody knows you are.
And if your safe approach involves what I think it involves, which is a semi-promise from Kyrie Irving that he's going to sign with your team in like 6 months, you can't depend on Kyrie in 6 minutes, let alone in like 6 months. Like, come on. Have you guys not seen the video of him telling a stadium full of Celtics fans that he's re-signing next year, only to not re-sign whatsoever? Plus everything else that I don't even need to say about Kyrie Irving that everyone knows, including the Lakers should know. they're crazy. And I guess, you know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. We're going to be getting fed some of the same type of rhetoric on Monday, but whatever.
I have one last note on that part before we can get back on track onto media day.
No, please, go ahead.
We have one season of evidence that demonstrates what works around LeBron James and AD, and it's a deep repertoire of role players that we saw in 2020. Them being willing to give up any and everything for Russell Westbrook, and then publicly, via their statements about wanting to be a contender to give up the 2 picks, publicly denigrating the value of role players like Buddy Hield, Miles Turner, Bojan Bogdanovic, you know, Rudy Gay, Malik Beasley, whoever the heck it is. By doing that, they're showing you that they haven't learned anything over the course of the last couple of years. We can talk all the crap we want about Russ and him being kind of like lacking self-awareness, but the Lakers are in the exact same predicament. They don't understand why they've failed and why they've succeeded over the years, and that's why they're in the predicament that they're in.
Yeah, gotta imagine when you hear reports about them wanting to like preserve cap space for their future, it's not for like a couple decent role players like Danny Green or something like that. You know what's going on in their mind. Just like I said, take for example, they're literally what they forked over to a reporter of their plans A, B, and C. Like, I kind of forgot about that until I brought it up, and now it's just hilarious. Anyways. We'll get to all the media day hijinks once they come. I'm sure we'll have all of next week to discuss some of the quotes from that day, but definitely wanted to get you on mostly to talk about, talk about some actual basketball, which we have not been able to do really at all this offseason in terms of like, what is the team going to look like? We've been trying to figure out what the team's going to look like for months. I think we all have a pretty decent idea now. Russ is going to be on the team. We know the rest of the roster. So let's talk about this roster and like what could come out of training camp in terms of changes to like what Ham may have in his head in terms of rotations and stuff like that. Guards. The Lakers have a lot of guards. I may be forgetting people, but from what I calculated, it was basically there's like six backcourt players that may all be in, say, what, the 10 to 12 man rotation that we see on opening night. Russ, Schroeder, Beverly, Nunn, Reeves, Lonnie Walker. They're all possibly going to be in the rotation. In terms of that, who do you think is the current starting like point guard and shooting guard in Ham's mind? Obviously, you might be giving me two point guards, but for the one and two positions, who do you think Ham's probably penciling in right now as a starter? Do you think that may change in training camp? And then like, who would you have as the starting backup for the Lakers on opening night?
So a couple of things. As far as the guards thing goes, we're all on the same page here. And I think that most of the Laker fan base would agree with us that the league is heading towards wings. I'm doing this series for power rankings where I'm going over the top, I think I've done the top 16 teams in the league, and I'm doing a bunch of deep dives into the X's and O's about the way they want to play. And as part of it, I just list a depth chart at the top of the show. And it's amazing how when you get to the top of the league, how deep they are at the wing position. Guys between 6'6 and 6'9 that can dribble, pass, and shoot and defend multiple positions. It's the way the league's been going forever for everybody except for Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss. For whatever reason, they seem obsessed with ball handling and big guys. It's just always been I have to throw some blame on LeBron and AD here, because I think it's because LeBron is relentless in his pursuit of backup playmaking and Anthony Davis is relentless in his pursuit of a big man that he can play alongside because he doesn't like to bang all season down underneath the basket. So that's the clutch guys deserve a lot of blame for that. But that said, even though I don't, in a vacuum, I hate the idea of targeting these 6 foot tall guards, the truth of the matter is not counting Russ, because that's a separate issue, coming into this offseason or coming into this situation after free agency, the Lakers had two starting level NBA players on their team, LeBron James and Anthony Davis. I think Austin Reeves could be that type of player if he became a more consistent shooter, but he's not quite there yet. So they added two starter level NBA players. Now, they're guards, they're tiny. I get that it's frustrating, but at the very least, for a talent deprived team, they brought in talent. So that's my very optimistic way of looking at it. Now, as far as the roster sets up, in order for Anthony Davis to play the five, you need to have enough aggregate size on the wing. It doesn't matter if Anthony Davis is at the five if you've got three small guards next to him and LeBron. It's just not going to work, right? So this was already shaping up to be an Anthony Davis at the four type of roster just before we ever got any further along. So from that standpoint, the aggregate size of the Lakers lineups is going to be pretty damn big all season, as long as Anthony Davis stays healthy, because you've got LeBron James, you've got Anthony Davis, you've got Damian Jones, you've got Thomas Bryant. But in the backcourt, in that situation, you allow yourself a lot of leniency with size. So if it were up to me, I would actually start Dennis Schroeder and Patrick Beverley together alongside LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Damian Jones. Structurally, you worry about size and perimeter players abusing them as small guys, but you buy them the leniency to be more aggressive and to gamble and to go after the basketball, because if they get beat off the dribble, there's just all of this size waiting on the back line. You know what I'm saying? Whereas if you're in a different type of situation and Dennis Schroeder is getting posted up by Kawhi Leonard on the left block and LeBron James is playing center, it can be catastrophic if Kawhi just starts going by Dennis Schroeder all the way to the rim, right? So I actually like the idea of going all in on ball pressure with Patrick Beverley and Dennis Schroeder and then playing big. Also, it's the matter of just playing the better basketball player. Naturally, right. Yes. You can have a bigger guy like a Lonnie Walker at the two. I actually think Austin Reeves will start if they decide to bring Schroeder off the bench. But if in that universe where you're playing a Lonnie Walker, he's just not nearly as good at basketball as Dennis Schroeder. So even though he might be a touch bigger and a little bit better of an athlete, and maybe he can hold up 10% better in a post-up against Kawhi Leonard, he still is not nearly as good at basketball as Dennis, and he won't be able to impact winning on either end of the floor as well as he does. So I would lean into your best players, and I'd start those two, and then I'd actually bring Russ off the bench because I don't think he's as good as either of them, but that would potentially cause a mutiny in the locker room. So there's a whole of a, but the dynamics at play with all the guards, it's really the personalities and the way that all of them are going to fit mm-hmm. together. In terms of the basketball, I think the solution is obvious.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually going to be writing an article for Lakers Outsiders just kind of about like what it would look like with Russ off the bench, because I agree with you. I don't think there's any real path to like realistic success for this team unless Russ is coming off the bench. Like it makes far too much sense just to offset him and LeBron as much as possible. And I think, yeah, I would probably lean Patrick Beverley and either Nunn or Reeves starting with like Schroeder and Russ coming off the bench at times. But yeah, it is just crazy like that. I don't think there's going to be a lineup that the Lakers run out there, as long as LeBron and AD are healthy, that doesn't have like 2 6-1 guys on the court like at the same time. And like I don't think there was any lineups of that sort in like the NBA finals last year or any conference finals. Like, yeah, maybe they had a point guard like Chris Paul or something out there, or like Derek White, but even like Derek White's probably taller than Nunn and like Schroeder and Russ.
And is a great defensive player.
But yeah, there's weird dynamics. Like you said, like, you know, which players are more talented than the other on this roster. But it just so happens that the players that you're kind of putting at the top of like the most talent is all of these guards. Like, you know, you look at the roster, I think the wings are Troy Brown, Juan Toscano-Anderson, and LeBron. And that might be it. Like,
you count Wenyen Gabriel.
Unless you count Wenyen Gabriel, but like in terms of talent, I don't think he's going to really get any playing time. But like, I don't think Brown and JTA make enough of an impact to validate them, their playing time, reducing the minutes of like Austin Reeves, or like certainly not like Patrick Beverley or Schroeder, Russ maybe. But obviously, you know, like Reeves and Beverley are not championship contending wings, even though we're hearing reports that that's basically how they're being viewed with the Lakers, which first of all, like, I know how that's a ludicrous statement, like just absolutely foolish to say, like it's ludicrous to say Austin Reeves is a wing and what, he's 6'4", 6'5".
But then you 6'4", see Patrick, pretty slight still.
6'4", pretty
allegedly
slight.
Allegedly he's put still. On some weight.
Allegedly put on some weight. Still, I think it was like he was 210 now. But like,
I'm bigger than almost Lakers wing. That's how embarrassing that situation is.
Well, we need to get you out there. I know I've said that on Twitter a bunch of times, but you are the Lakers fourth wing.
I'd get my ass handed to me so fast, Donnie. You have no idea, man.
But like, do you think, I think they're kind of thinking, okay, keep our heads above water. Like, yeah, Reeves may be our three at times on the court, if not often. Can we keep our heads above water until the trade deadline, see if we can get some bites on Russell Westbrook, then get a wing and see where we can go? I think I know where you're at, and it's probably the same place where I'm at, where I think it's you make a trade now or just don't. But Do you think they can kind of maintain something and then just plug and play some newly acquired guy at the trade deadline via Russ and then go on?
I think that if I really gave some truth serum to Rob and Jeannie, I don't think they believe in this group at all. I believe they can use the trade deadline as an excuse to pass the buck a couple months. I believe they expect the team to immediately flounder. And if they're struggling around the trade deadline, then that's the easiest excuse in the world to be like, well, we just wait till the end of the season. Russ is off our books. End of the issue. We can rebuild. It's an easy way to pass pass the buck down the line, and then they can blame LeBron James and Anthony Davis for not being good enough this season if for whatever reason they're not good enough. Here's where I have a problem with that. First of all, I expect Anthony Davis to have one of the best seasons of his career this year. I think Lakers Twitter has bullied him enough that they literally bullied him into the gym earlier this summer. That's a literal thing that happened. Okay,
like bullied him into picking up the phone and calling Lethal Shooter.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then in addition to that, he's had two embarrassing seasons. His own reputation in the league is at stake here. You know, I've never seen a player go from being in the conversation for best player in the world in 2020 to I had him 18th in my player rankings, and I think almost everybody would have him outside of the top 10 right now after the way he's played over the last couple of years. It's a pretty rapid decline for a guy that I believe is still in his 20s. Like that's pretty insane. But the thing that's tricky here is what I was presenting as the Schroeder Beverly starting backcourt. That's the obvious basketball route to go, but I doubt they even consider that, because my guess is Darvin Ham's going to start Russ, and the reporting coming out of the Laker front office is that they're considering the two guard battle to be Austin Reeves versus Lonnie Walker. And that's crazy to me. So what does that mean? That means you have Dennis Schroeder, Kendrick Nunn, and Patrick Beverley coming off the bench as guards. Like, what in the world is, I just genuinely, you can just tell the entire basketball decision-making process from the top down in the LA front office is just so ass backwards from everything else that's happening around the league. And that's just, it's truly discouraging. And I was saying this to somebody on Twitter today. I can't remember. I think it was my buddy David, but it's like they're setting them up to fail, because the truth of the matter is if you go all in on Anthony Davis and LeBron and you trade Russ, you throw out the two picks and you bring back a bunch of role players and they fail, you can blame them. Because if you give LeBron James and Anthony Davis that long repertoire of role players, the responsibility is on them to win the basketball games. That's the crazy part to me. Them not wanting to pull the trigger points all the fingers back at the front office and makes them look very Danny Ainge-esque and unwilling to push their chips into the middle of the table. It's kind of like a really strange dynamic, because you're getting Jeannie Buss going out. And I know she got on your case the other day, which I found absolutely hilarious because you were just speaking truths. But like, she's going out on like a public defense tour every other week now. And I want to be like, make the trade and then it's LeBron's problem. Because if you give him Patrick Beverley, Dennis Schroeder, Austin Reeves, Bojan Bogdanovic, Rudy Gay, Malik Beasley, or, you know, Miles Turner, Buddy Hield with, you know, Thomas Bryant and Damian Jones and all these guys, it's on them. Now you get to say it's their responsibility. No one's going to blame you if you make that trade and the team still sucks. They're going to be like, oh man, LeBron can't stay healthy anymore, and Anthony Davis is nowhere near the player he used to be. That's going to be the takes coming out of that. You know what I mean? So that kind of thing is backwards. But you're right. You're pointing to a very important thing here. If they prioritize personalities, like, oh, Lonnie should play because he has a mid-level exception and he's a clutch client. Or, oh, Russell Westbrook should start because he's Russell Westbrook. If they do that, the Lakers' best basketball players will not play enough, and it will hurt the team. And I hope that sooner than later, they say they're talking about giving Russ a long runway. I don't know what the idea is there, but if they don't start playing their best players earlier than later, then they're going to reach the deadline as a team that's, you know, 18 and 25, and it's not going to make sense to invest in that group anyway.
Yeah, they're crazy. They're just absolutely crazy. Like the Lonnie, I'm glad you kind of brought up the Lonnie thing, because I just genuinely have no idea how Lonnie Walker's individual season is going to go with this team. I think he has the biggest variability of like potential minutes on this team. I think, you know, I was like foolishly, you know, I'm no NBA coach, mapping out like rotations if like Russ were to come off the bench for that article I was talking about. I was just like doing, I was like, you know, I can't like in my right mind give Lonnie Walker any minutes, let alone like a sizable role that should go to the highest paid guy of the offseason. Tactically, he got the most money out of any free agent that the Lakers brought in this year, and like you said, he's a clutch guy. So like you know, thinking of that, like, come on, like, yeah, he is going to get rotation minutes, but what does that mean? Like, does that mean Kendrick Nunn's not playing at all? Does that mean Austin Reeves is getting a minutes deduction from last year, even though he's arguably the best combination of like offense and defense on the team aside from LeBron and AD?
For a role player, yes, absolutely.
For a role player, yeah. Like, yeah. That's just like crazy to me. But like you said, like, I'll believe them choosing basketball over these off the court semantics, personality type stuff. Like, I'll believe it when I see it. Mm-hmm. And if I do see it, that means they're staying out of the mix. Rich Paul is staying out of the mix. Rob and Jeannie are staying out of the mix, and they're just letting Darvin Ham go to work. I'll believe that when I see it, sadly. Sadly, that's what I'm coming to, that I'll believe they let the coach do, you know, coaching when I see it.
They have not earned the benefit of the doubt, and that's exactly why it's so ridiculous for them to be like, oh, trust us, we're taking this the patient and measured route. It's like, no. If Masai Ujiri said that in the press conference, right, I'd be like, okay, Masai, I believe you. Like, you got this, man. Like every time they start making these sorts of promises, they can't hold up their end of the bargain. It's just the reality. And, you know, with the Lonnie Walker thing, really quickly, in terms of on-ball stuff, he doesn't do anything as well as Kendrick or Dennis Schroeder. Patrick Beverley is nearly as good on the ball right now as Lonnie Walker is. That's how, you know, he just hasn't lived up to his expectations yet in the NBA. And then in an off-ball role, there's nothing he does as well as Austin Reeves. I trust Austin Reeves. You know, the shooting percentages were relatively low this year, but if you actually look at catch and shoot percentages, he actually shot okay. It was in the mid-30s. I trust Austin Reeves better to attack closeouts and make reads. Yep. I trust Austin Reeves better defensively to guard another team's best player or to be in help. Like, so you're absolutely right. Like, the player that the Lakers invested in this summer is a player that should, in theory, have to earn and fight for every single minute he gets on this team. And here's the thing. If he earns it, I'll be right there behind him. I'll be like, Lonnie's killing it. He should be playing more.
Right.
But for him to just get kind of gift wrapped that position when he hasn't really done anything in the league to have earned that, I think is just indicative of the process from the Lakers and just how, like I said earlier, ass backwards that it is.
Yeah. Well, the backcourt. The backcourt is going to be obviously the most key thing to look for in the preseason, the beginning of the season, but kind of moving to front court, you know, our power forward. I made a joke on Twitter that Patrick Beverley is going to be like our power forward for the team. And honestly, you know, they said Reeves is a three. We're not too far off of saying Patrick Beverley is going to be our four at times. I digress. But obviously, lack of size, there's going to be a lack of size on the 1-3 all season. Even if LeBron and AD are healthy all season, if they do have a downfall, that lack of size is going to be their downfall. You're kind of talking earlier about their aggregate of size, you know, on the five man, you know, the five men that are on the floor at all times. I do think like this roster has more talent than last year's, but since like the individual's normal roles, like, don't mesh well with each other, I think Ham's going to have to get like really weird with some things. I mean, obviously, we're already kind of hearing murmurs of that with, like I said, Austin Reeves as a three. But speaking of that, do you think, like, I kind of think this might be, this is not going to make fans happy, the least amount of time we see AD at the five in this season compared to, you know, last season, the season before, then the championship season, just so they can keep a baseline of size on the court at all times with Damian Jones and Thomas Bryant. Do you think that's kind of how it's going to go? Do you think maybe the closing lineup would have AD at the five? I'm not even sure if like AD at the five for the closing lineup is realistic with this roster.
They'll only be able to do that in very specific matchups. Damian Jones defends pretty well switching onto perimeter players. So I do think that if they do close with AD at the four, it'll be Damian Jones that plays. You had mentioned them like Darvin Ham having to go weird, and you're absolutely right. They're going to have to go weird, because if they try to play modern basketball, like small ball, 88 to 5, switch everything or switch most things, and then five out drive and kick on offense. They're not nearly as good defensively as the better five out or the better small ball teams in the league. And they're not, they don't have nearly enough passing, dribbling, and shooting on the perimeter to be as good driving and kicking as a team like the Clippers is going to be, or as a team like the Boston Celtics is going to be. So if they lean into modern basketball as a strategy, they'll get their ass kicked because they're just not as good as other teams. But if they get funky, and what I mean by that is, like you're saying, like go huge all the time so that they're just bigger than all the other teams, right? And you go small in the backcourt with Patrick Beverley and Dennis Schroeder and lean on, even when you go to the bench to Kendrick Nunn, or if Russ ends up playing or whoever it is that's out there, lean on ball pressure on the perimeter. Be really good at one thing. Like I always talk about this when I'm covering the other teams around the league. Like I really like it when I see a team like the Bucks last year who struggled to defend the three-point line, but they completely shut down the paint, like relentlessly shut down the paint. Because it's like, look, like, at the very least, we're taking away one of the two most efficient shots in basketball. Like, you can't kind of... I think having Darvin Ham come over from Milwaukee and the way that they ran their defense with Brook Lopez and Giannis, like, just relentlessly taking away the paint to the detriment of your three-point defense, I think that makes sense to me. Live and die by your opponent's three-point shooting. Completely shut down the paint. Go all in on ball pressure. You're giving Patrick Beverley and Dennis Schroeder and all of these guys out there the freedom to be aggressive on the perimeter, knowing they have tons of backside help. And then on the offensive end of the floor, your spacing is going to be shit. But guess what? The spacing's been shit the entire time that LeBron and AD have.
Even the championship year.
Yeah, even the championship year. Like their spacing is going to be terrible, but so what? And LeBron James is one of the best half-court surgeons in basketball. I think he'll be able to figure out how to score enough. But at the very least, have an identity. And if your identity is we're huge, we rebound the hell out of the basketball, we defend the paint like crazy, and then on offense, we just ram it down your throat with LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Dennis Schroeder, and Russ if he's there, just go into the rim relentlessly. Even if we miss a bunch of layups, we'll get a bunch of offensive rebounds. Like, I don't care. Like, pick an identity and stick to it. And to me, their identity has to be weird, like you're saying. Go against the grain, because you can't go with the grain because you just don't have the players to do it.
Like, I think they might have to just do some crazy stuff, just like, all of a sudden, like, there's like one rotation a game where AD's like at the three for some reason. Like, like he's kind of like he's playing the four, but then like you're kind of thinking about it, you're like, AD's kind of just like guarding their three. Like, what's going on here? Like, yeah.
Gabriel around the basket waiting on the backside.
we're gonna have a nice lineup of Thomas Bryant, Damian Jones, Gabriel, AD, and LeBron. Just like powering, just bumbling around the court, just like no perimeter defense. But hey, like try and score at the rim on us, you know, try and out rebound us. Obviously that's not gonna happen, or maybe Darvin Ham shouldn't have a head coaching job. I sincerely doubt he's gonna do that. Let's see. I guess we can go to, are there any kind of, we've talked about a lot already, but are there any kind of positional rotational battles at camp that kind of intrigue you? Like maybe you might hear a report about it and you're like, ooh, I like hearing that. Any hot takes you think like we'll be scratching our head about or surprised about unfolding, you know, during the preseason and training camp?
The big one to watch will be whether or not they're willing to move Russ to the bench. And again, like up front, I think Russ is a better basketball player in a vacuum in terms of his talent than Dennis Schroeder, Patrick Beverley, Kendrick Nunn, all those guys. Okay. But when you factor in what their role is going to be on this team, which is none of those guys are good enough to be primary ball creators, like literally none of them. Okay. Even Dennis Schroeder. And there is no Kyrie Irving in that group, right? So every single one of those players that plays needs to be an excellent on-ball and off-ball defensive player that can be a threat off the basketball, either in catch-and-shoot situations, attacking closeouts, or cutting or screening for teammates. Like, those are absolute musts for that position. are they going to appropriately factor that in the position battle between LeBron, or excuse me, between Russ and Dennis, or Russ and Pat? I don't know. That's going to be, and then the second one is going to be Patrick Beverly, or excuse me, Austin Reeves and Lonnie Walker. Because again, in a vacuum, if we went down and watched the two players work out, Lonnie Walker is going to look like a much better basketball player. He certainly is a more talented basketball player. But within the confines of what that fifth starter is and what you need from that position, Austin Reeves is a significantly better basketball player in that specific role with that specific group. And so is Lonnie Walker just going to be gifted the position because he's a clutch client making over $5 million a year? Or is it going to go to Austin Reeves because he's the better fit for the position as an off-ball player who can attack closeouts and things along those lines? Those are going to be the two ones that I watch. I do think Damian Jones will start over Thomas Bryant. And I think some of the hype surrounding him and what he does as a shooter is a little bit overblown. Damian Jones is just a traditional drop coverage big that can do some switching onto the perimeter. He's a decent rim running, you know, vertical spacing threat. He's a perfectly fine starting NBA center. You know, not one of the best players in the league by any stretch, but he's perfectly fine there and he's dependable. I think dependable is better next to great players than high variance players, which is kind of the same type of dynamic between Lonnie and Austin, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I was going to ask you about Damian Jones and Thomas Bryant. I totally agree. Like I don't know. I feel like people have kind of, yeah, like you said, put way too much emphasis on like his shooting, which was very poor when he came back from injury last season. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. I really hope it improves because his shooting would help. But like, what? Like, we want Thomas Bryant starting and shooting like 3 to 4 3-pointers a game. Like, I think even if he's shooting like 35%, I don't really want that.
Our team's going to guard him. That's all that matters.
Right.
Our team's going to guard Thomas Bryant at the 3-point line. No. So who cares if he makes two of them a game? The only thing that actually impacts your spacing is whether or not teams treat him like a shooter. And I don't care if he goes 2 for 5 every game, no team is going to guard him out there. It's just the reality of the situation.
Exactly. Especially if he's in the starting lineup alongside LeBron at AD. Like,
yeah,
go ahead, shoot him. We're going to guard LeBron at AD. All right, go ahead, keep shooting him.
When you're talking about shooting percentages too, I'll really quick here. Like, it just, there's always context. Like, yeah, oh, it'd be like, oh, Rondo shot 39% from three last year. It's like every one of them, the defender was 10 feet away from him. Like every single one of them. Like, it's not the same as Joe Harris shooting 42% with like defenders chasing him on his backside and barely getting any airspace. It's like all of that stuff has context, and the context with bad shooters that shoot decent percentages is they're almost always unguarded.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be very interesting to, you know, just watch, see what we hear about Lonnie versus Austin, the centers, if like Troy Brown or JTA are going to be, you know, playing more than what I think. We'll see. There's just so many things to be decided in training camp. Obviously, that's what happens when you return the team every single season, but whatever. Oh, that's another topic.
Screw continuity, man. We don't even need a training camp. Let's wait till the deadline to make a deal.
Yeah. Stop. You're making me upset. Because
we'll have like 3 practices the rest of the season after that.
Oh, man. Can you imagine if they go 0-6 or whatever in the preseason game?
They might. This
is going to be so bad. Obviously, like you said at the top, first time we've spoken, who knows when the next time will be when we speak. So I got to get you on the record. What's your prediction for, I got to think of mine on the spot. I'll give you mine since I'm asking for yours. What's your prediction for where in the seeding the Lakers will end up in the Western Conference? And then, well, I guess you might give me your prediction for how their season ends with the seeding, but give me your prediction for how their season ultimately ends.
So to be clear, I do think they have a championship ceiling. I think if they make a Russ deal and they bring in some quality role players, Anthony Davis has a career year, LeBron has one last great season, I think they're absolutely in the mix. I'd put them in like the second tier of contenders if all of those things go right. But yeah, like still head to head with a team like Boston, it would take a miraculous LeBron and AD performance to beat them. That said, I think the far more likely scenario, like if someone put a gun to my head and said, you have to tell me what's going to happen with this Lakers team, take a guess. I think that it goes off the rails quickly. I think that LeBron and AD both miss a ton of time. I think they miss the playoffs, and I think it's more of the same next summer. That's my guess.
Yeah, I'm I'm thinking, I don't think Russ is going to get traded, period. So assuming Russ is there the entire season, and let's just assume in this scenario, LeBron and AD play 70 plus games each. I think that is going to get them with Russ alongside them. I think that's getting them like max five seed, like probably more so like around 6 or 7. And like I said, that's with extremely healthy LeBron and AD. Like, I don't know. I just think the West is just too good for them. I think they could be close in like standings to like, you know, the 5, 4, 3, 2 seeds of the West. It could be really close altogether. But then like once it gets down to playoff time, like I just feel like there's so many ways to take advantage of this Lakers team, especially when they're on defense, that any playoff matchup that they have, you know, if they're 5 or 6 seed, they're playing 4 or 3. I think whatever team's in that spot would have enough to take them down pretty easily, even with LeBron and AD out there. Obviously, like you said, you know, you get healthy LeBron and AD, you can literally do anything. But like you said, a lot of things also have to go right around LeBron and AD for them to like truly get to, you know, the likes of Boston Celtics or the Golden State Warriors last year. Like so many things that are extremely improbable have to go right. So that's where I'm at. If LeBron and AD get hurt, like you said, like a little bit, I think it's the same exact thing. I don't think they make the play in like all together.
Yeah, if they both miss 20 games, you're already in the play in at the best case scenario. You know
exactly. And like, yeah, it would be nice if they traded Russ at the deadline for, you know, like you said, the same pieces we've been talking about all summer, whether it's from the Jazz or the Pacers or someone else. But like, I don't know. I just don't like, there's not many instances of someone making that big of a shakeup in their roster at the trade deadline and then going on to win a championship.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it behooves you to have, you know, most of your top 10 rotation at, you know, at this media day, at training camp, mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, so you can build, especially on your team where only 2 or 3 of the guys were on the team last year. Like that makes it even more important to have continuity from day one, and, you know, build a team together for 82 games. So yeah, I think it'd be just awesome if the Lakers got a 5th seed this year. Like that would be like, I'd probably be one of that, like extremely happy with how the season goes if that happens, which with LeBron and AD is just a crazy thing to say out loud.
Oh, I know. Really quickly, you say 5 seed. I mentioned this earlier. I think Anthony Davis, I hope he stays healthy because I do truly believe that he's going to have a great season if he does stay healthy. I don't think he'll stay healthy. My guess is he'll deal with the same nagging crap he always deals with, and he'll only play like about 50 games. That's my guess. But I hope he stays healthy because if he does, I do think he'll get much closer to what he was in the bubble. And if he does that, they're going to be better than a 5 seed, Donnie, I think. I mean, like, mm-hmm. if LeBron James and Anthony Davis both play 70 games and they both play like top 10 players, just by virtue of talent, that puts you, you know, in a, like, don't forget that when they were healthy alongside a role player group that a lot of people slandered the previous offseason, they started the season 24-3 in 2020 because LeBron and AD were just attacking everybody out the gate. So they are the biggest, I'd say Anthony Davis is the biggest swing factor. It's just, yeah. We are foolish if we depend on him to play 60 plus games. It's just, that would be a bad gamble on our part.
I was going to say, if some supernatural being was like, all right, I've got a bet for you, you know, AD plays, you know, 65 plus games a season or not, like you're an absolute fool. I don't care what the odds are. You're an absolute fool to be taking the plus 65, like go spend your money elsewhere. Anywhere else would probably be a more wise decision. But yeah, as an owner of, you know, I got into buying some basketball cards, over the pandemic, as a guy who has a few Anthony Davis rookie cards, I really, really hope. And I bought them at the peak of the stock price. You know, you picture the stock going up and down. I bought at the peak. So I need these cards to get back up there in terms of price. And what you're talking about would definitely do it. And yeah, like you said, they really can go Russ aside, they really can go to whatever heights they want if those two guys, LeBron and AD, are staying healthy-ish and playing like they did at many times over the past couple seasons. Even AD with like his last couple seasons, they've been so poor, marred by injury. But like when he came back from injury this past season, initially, he was insane. Like I remember the first game, everyone was like, he's going to have to kind of ease into it. And he looked so good. Of course, that kind of waned still after that. But yeah, I really hope he does that. Anything else before I let you go? Any closing thought on the 2022-23 Los Angeles Lakers?
It'll be entertaining, if nothing else, man.
Is it going to be... Okay, last question. Is it going to be as toxic or less toxic or more toxic than last season?
I think it'll be less toxic as long as LeBron James and Anthony Davis are healthy. But if it does go south early, it'll be more toxic because then it'll be like,
agreed,
you will have the full force of Laker Nation. Like, you have to get rid of this guy like that. I think it could get really ugly right at the bitter end.
Agreed. And I'll add a note to that. If LeBron and AD start getting injured, I do agree it would get more toxic. Also, because if LeBron and AD get injured, who are you going to be having doing post game quotes? Russ, probably Patrick Beverley. And, yeah, you know, we haven't had many experiences. We don't have any experiences with Darvin Ham doing post games. I got to imagine a grumpy Darvin Ham is going to be putting up with much less bullshit than a grumpy Frank Vogel. You know, Frank Vogel, very, very nice, very,
very
calm
political
man.
Yeah.
Very political, very seemingly, from everything I've heard, very nice guy. Not to say Darvin Ham's mean or anything like that. He just seems a little bit more intense, I'd say. Mm. So
I think he is
that
too.
Those kind of people giving post-game quotes after, you know, many losses, I could see, yeah, like you said, being more toxic. Well, All right, Media Day. You're going to be hearing this on a Thursday. Media Day is on Monday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. 4 days. Do some math there. Going to be crazy. I can only imagine what some of the quotes we're going to hear. But either way, I'm just so glad we're getting closer to basketball. Jason, thank you again for coming on. I really appreciate it. Really looking forward to talking to you randomly here and there along the season. Hopefully talking about fun things, but we'll see. Like I said, Media Day is on Monday, unofficial start of the season. We'll have some more podcasts and content for you on this feed as well as on the site, so be sure to check that out. Until then, this is Donnie McHenry with Lakers Outsiders, and we'll catch you next time.